Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's show all about comics and manga and various things. Pictures in sequential form with words in speech bubbles.
It's a very elegant summary.
Yes, we go back all the way to the cave paintings and we added speech bubbles.
Actually, that ties into like one of the things in Deadpool that I'm going to talk about in a bit.
Oh God. Right, anyway, joining me today is Andrew. How are you doing, Andrew?
Yes, I am good. I'm glad that we're here on such a packed show today, full of people.
Yes, full of people. Those people aren't real, though. They are fictional. They're in comic books.
Shh, don't tell them that. Let's start with the news.
Yes, let's start with the news.
Okay, so first up, we have got some new images and a new promo trailer for the Fantastic Four film. So the pictures, they kind of give some good looks at like what everyone's outfit's going to look like. But the promo is kind of not really new stuff except for actually getting to see the Human Torch flame on.
Thing is, the Human Torch flaming on, okay, fine. Ben Grimm is huge. That's how I want him to look. That's fine. But the guy who's playing Reed Richards looks about 12.
He is. He's also a guy who, like, in all the films I've seen him in, is played kind of like a dopey, almost stonerish type of person. So it's a bit odd seeing him as, like, mastermind genius Reed Richards.
I mean, this is directed by the guy who has directed Chronicle. I've forgotten his name. What's his name?
Josh Trank.
Josh Trank, that's it. And I liked Chronicle.
Yeah, Chronicle was good.
I really liked Chronicle, but I've got concerns about this movie. Number one, I don't think the casting has been the best it can be. You know,
are you saying Billy Elliot as the Thing was a bad choice?
Yes, Ben can do the voice better than I can, but oh no, I'm the Thing. You know,
I want to see the Thing elegantly pirouette away from.
Yeah,
fights.
Let me pirouette before I enact a plie, and then I take my role in Swan Lake with my lovely little tutu. Yes, there you go, Ben Grimm, the Thing in a tutu with a little tiara,
because it's plie time.
Yes. Anyway, no. No more renditions of Swan Lake. Anyway, they all look about. I've said it before and I'll say it again. They look like they are Fantastic Four Junior. And I can understand this is somehow going to be designed to entice a younger audience. But I've got several concerns with this. Number one, if all you wanted to make was Chronicle 2,
yeah,
then make Chronicle 2.
To be fair to Josh Trank, I think he tried making Chronicle 2, but no one would pick it up. So now he's kind of just using this film as an excuse to do it.
The thing is, Billy Elliot as the Thing, not a good choice, because the thing is, all of these actors I don't think are a good choice, but that's just based on the history of the comic books, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they could very well prove us wrong in the film itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's Josh Trank, and he did a great job with Chronicles, so we do have some hope, but based on the information that we have at the moment from all of the interviews and the trailers and all of that, it's not looking good.
Yeah, I think the main problem is it seems to be missing kind of the core point of the Fantastic Four, which is it's about a family, not just a superhero team.
Well, yeah, but the other key point is it's not just about family, but it's about a mature family. You know, Reed Richards is a man.
Yeah, well, Susan Storm, the dad.
Yeah, Susan Storm is a woman. She is the mother. Johnny Storm is, you know, he's the wayward younger brother, but he is still a man.
Yeah,
and
well,
Benjamin
to be fair,
Grimm,
like, in the very early comics, he was only like 17, 18-ish.
No, he was older.
No, he's like, because didn't like he go to college originally?
No, he was in college, but he was later on in college. You know, so he was basically in his early 20s, very early 20s. We're talking like 21 age group,
okay,
that sort
yeah,
of thing.
Pause.
You know, you're right about him being in college, but he was kind of later on in college. But Ben Grimm has been You know, he has been an astronaut. He's been a pilot. He's been in the military, you know. That has been Ben Grimm all the way through.
Yeah, to be fair, I think Ben Grimm is the one who suffers the most by making them younger, because then kind of what's his character?
Yeah. I mean, his whole point is that the tragedy of him becoming the thing and never being able to return to what he was. And it's one of the things that drives Reed Richards, because of the guilt he feels towards his best friend for destroying his best friend's life. Because after Ben Grimm becomes the thing, his fiance wants nothing to do with him. And he ends up having to date a blind woman.
Yeah, because like she's the only one who isn't put off by the whole Made of Rocks thing.
Yep, exactly. But he
also says a lot about how kinky Alicia Masters is.
Yeah, we weren't going to go there, but you did, didn't
you? I did.
You horrible, horrible man.
Oh, God, I've just realized as well. She's a sculptor, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Oh.
It says a lot of kinky things about Ben Grimm when she gets that chisel out.
Please put that in the Fantastic Four.
No, don't. Marvel, do not do this. Do not listen to Andrew. He is a bad, bad man.
I'm a very bad man.
Right, okay. So, yeah. Leaving that to one side, because I'm sure that's not going to make it into the movie. My main concerns, obviously, there's a wealth of comic book history that has just been begging to be used. And it feels like it's not being used.
Yeah. I think Josh Trank is definitely, he's more interested in making his film than adapting the comic books, it seems.
The thing is, he could have done both. He could have done an amazing job. And it still might turn out better than we think. You know, it still might turn out better than we think. So let's be fair. But I can't help but have I can't help but think that it's going to be worse. It may turn out better. I hope it does turn out better. But on the basis of what we know and on the basis of what we can see right now,
yeah,
I have a hunch that it's going to be hated even more than the original two movies.
Although you say that, those actually aren't the original two movies.
No, they're not. But we don't mention the ones that came before.
Is it bad that I actually really like the terrible 1990s one?
We do not mention the ones that came in the 90s. They are consigned to the same place that Batman and Robin.
Oh, the pit to. Of things we shall never talk about again.
Yes, let us never speak of them again. In that pit, you will find Joel Schumacher as well. he was banished there by Hollywood.
Just occasionally we throw down copies of the DVDs and go, it rubs the DVDs on the skin or it gets the hose.
Did you just reference Sounds of the Lambs?
Just reference Sounds of the Lambs.
Right, okay. Moving on, what have we got next?
Next, we have quite a lovely story of Make-A-Wish Foundation kind of teaming up with the Deadpool film, because apparently a kid, Tony Acevedo, who has Hodgkin's disease, and his Make-A-Wish wish was to meet Deadpool. So he actually got to go to the set of the Deadpool film and hang out with Ryan Reynolds.
In full costume, was it?
Yes, in full costume.
That's really cool. I like that.
And then, like, even let him wear the Deadpool mask.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. It's nice to see celebrities do stuff like that.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of celebrities. I mean, Johnny Depp still goes around to kids' hospitals dressed as Jack Sparrow. And, what's his face? Hellboy.
Oh, Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman actually dresses up as Hellboy and goes around to kids' hospitals.
I think Ron Perlman just dresses up as Hellboy and hangs around the house.
You think he likes Hellboy that much?
No, to me, he seems like that kind of guy.
Well, you know for a fact Ryan Reynolds is basically taking the Deadpool costume with him when the movie's finished.
Oh, yeah, he's going to sleep in that costume.
Yeah, we're going to, what was it? What was that MTV show? Was it Cribs or something like that? Where you go around seeing celebrities' houses.
Something like that.
Yeah, they'll do like a special episode of that on Ryan Reynolds, and you go into his wardrobe, and there'll be suits and suits and suits. There'll be his costume from Two Guys and a Girl, and you know what? And then there'll just be rows of Deadpool outfits going back into the horizon. It's comfortable. I can exercise in it. I can sleep in it. I can eat in it. It's comfy. It doesn't give me wedgies.
I would live like from now on, like even at Hollywood events, he shows him like a tuxedo and just a Deadpool mask.
Yes.
Basically, what I'm saying is Ryan Reynolds just become Deadpool.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds, you heard it here first. You should just change your name to Wade Wilson, right? We're not expecting you to scar yourself or anything like that horribly. You can keep your normal face.
I'm just saying, if you did want to, accuracy is always loved.
I know, but I don't think it's necessary. Yeah, he's wearing a mask. But if he changes his name from Ryan Reynolds to Wade Wilson, the alliteration still remains.
That's true. Gotta love that.
You know?
Actually, no, Ryan Reynolds, don't scar your face. I've just realised if he did, I would most likely be beaten to death by just legions of female fans.
Yes, you would. But yes, he would keep the alliteration. It'd be handy when he eventually died, because he may never die, we're not sure. But he would get two gravestones. We know that. It would be Wade Wilson, and there would be Wade Wilson again. Anyway, enough of the in-jokes from Deadpool. Shall we move on?
Yes, let's. Because now we have a trifecta of casting rumours.
Ooh.
I'm just happy I got to use the word trifecta.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so first up, Matthew McConaughey has apparently been in talks with Marvel and DC regarding being in a superhero film, with the current presiding rumour being he might be Norman Osborn in, like, the eventual Spider-Man reboot.
See, I never get tired of hearing how they're going to reboot Spider-Man yet again.
Yeah. Hopefully this time it'll actually stick.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that they're doing Peter Parker's story all over again is kind of, how many times do you have to kill off Uncle Ben before you're happy? Seriously, Marvel and whoever, and Warner Brothers or whoever it is.
I think it was Sony.
It was Sony and Marvel. Do you hate Uncle Ben that much? Do you hate his rice that much?
It's not Uncle Ben's fault.
Did he serve you bad rice? Did it not taste good? Was his cooking sauce not tasty? Why must you hate Uncle Ben so much?
It's not Uncle Ben has
done nothing. He's done nothing to you. All he did was make a tasty rice product.
Yeah, but it's just occasionally in life we get Spider-Man 3s and Amazing Spider-Man 2s that must just be scoured from the face of the earth.
Yes. Do not blame the Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben does nice rice.
Yeah. He is just a poor unfortunate casualty of the need to constantly reboot Spider-Man because people keep doing it wrong.
Yes. Anyway.
Anyway.
So, yeah, he could be Norman Osborn for Marvel. But what about with DC?
I don't know. They're kind of like a bunch of different options that have come up as just like possibilities. Stuff like maybe Green Arrow or Swamp Thing.
I don't think he'd be good as Green Arrow. Matthew McConaughey as Swamp Thing, though, would be hilarious.
But I can just get back to you. Giant hulking swamp monster going, time is a flat circle.
Sorry, what?
True Detective.
Oh, God, yes, yes. Sorry, that was great. I want that on a t-shirt. Rawr, time is a flat circle. Rawr.
Okay, now that we've had a good laugh, shall I move on to the sad news?
Yes, move on to the sad news.
Apparently, there's going to be a Static Shock movie, and the actor who has been quite possibly confirmed to play him is Jaden Smith.
Sorry, did you just call Jaden Smith an actor?
And I am sorry to
wash your mouth
everywhere.
Out with soap. Wash your mouth out with soap.
Okay, I will just have to reboot myself.
Yes.
So that we can pretend that never happened.
Yes, yes, yes. We may have to cut that bit from the show. Jaden Smith, take a knee. I'm sorry, but... Will.
To be fair, I don't hate Jaden Smith. I think it's just he has kind of the unfortunate situation of being Will Smith's son and not being very good at acting.
Yeah, but it's Will Smith, you know. He had to learn how to act as well.
He did, but he was Jaden Smith, he's a guy who has literally no natural talent for acting.
Yeah, but that's only because he was raised in West Philadelphia. You know, he spent most of his youth on the playground. Yeah.
Until eventually he moved to Beverly Hills.
To Bel Air, yeah. He got moved to, you know, he got into a bit of trouble in West Philadelphia. But so, you know, his mom.
Yeah, I heard that a couple of guys were up to no good.
Yeah, started making trouble in the neighborhood.
It's quite unfair because he just got in one little fight.
His mom was really strict. One little fight, you know, and he got shipped off to Bel Air to live with his uncle.
And Andy.
Yeah, and Auntie and their family. And their very, very English butler.
He was so incredibly English.
Yes. Carlton dance. Da, 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 da. Anyway, enough. I don't think it's a good choice.
No.
But then again, what other young actors are there who could possibly play Static Shock?
Well, there's Tyler James Williams, but he might be busy being Miles Morales in the Marvel films.
Really?
Yes, that is our third story, that apparently he has confirmed that he has read for Marvel. So like they want him for a role, and people are guessing it might be Miles Morales as Spider-Man.
I think the fan outcry might have reached Marvel.
Possibly. It would be hard not to.
I mean, people have been saying for ages they want Miles Morales.
Yeah, because he's just become an insanely popular character.
Much more popular than Peter Parker.
Yeah. I think because they actually allow him to grow as a character, whereas Peter Parker's just stuck in the same rut he's been for like 30-odd years now.
Well, I think the other part of it is that once you reach a certain point, people just want something different. You know, they want something different. And I think part of Miles Morales' popularity is the fact that he is different.
Yeah,
well, give him another 30 years.
And people will be sick of him as well.
Yeah, being rebooted. You know, and people will be sick of him as well. So, yes.
It's okay. Then we'll just get a new Spider-Man who's like an albino or something.
Okay. White Spider. Kind of racist.
I am. Sorry, racism people. Anyway.
Enough of that. Also, don't call Miles Morales the Black Spider because you'll probably get punched.
you really will.
Because Spider-Man does have the black outfit, doesn't he?
And he
there
does.
There is, you know.
So maybe Peter Parker can be the Black Spider.
Yep.
That's less racist.
Well, they couldn't really call him the Black Spider, so they called him Venom instead. Anyway, enough of that. So Miles Morales possibly going to be in a Marvel movie coming soon.
Oh, unless he's playing Cloak.
Oh, yes, because there was talk about Cloak and Dagger movie,
yeah,
wasn't
it? Yeah, and like I literally just looked down to one of my comics and just saw Cloak on the cover and like, oh, that could also work.
Cloak and Dagger is one of those, it's one of those ones that's been around for a while, but a lot of people don't really know what it's about. So tell us, what is Cloak and Dagger?
Okay, Cloak and Dagger, like, a pair of teenagers who, like, I think, yeah, they're a couple, and they get kidnapped by some sort of corporation who experiments on them.
Yeah.
And they end up getting superpowers. Cloak is, like, he's basically, like, a big flying cloak who can teleport people into, like, a crazy dark dimension thing.
Yeah.
And Dagger can, like, make daggers out of light.
Yeah, throwing knives, that sort of thing.
He doesn't like just make magical daggers appear in the roof that illuminate rooms.
Yeah, but they have a very, very troubled kind of relationship because of what happened to them.
Yeah, it's like they're definitely just incredibly traumatized by the experience.
And where Dagger wants to go off on revenge, Cloak is just kind of, look, enough is enough.
Yeah, let's just try and get on with our lives.
Yeah, so anyway, it's actually quite interesting, the relationship between the two of them. It's one of those ones that I'm actually curious about. I would like to see a Cloak and Dagger movie because I think it would be an interesting road for Marvel to travel.
Yeah, I think definitely now Marvel are trying to look for kind of different types of superhero, like who are less traditional for them to make films about. That's why we've got stuff like Guardians.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that an Iron Fist movie would go down quite well, or just Heroes for Hire. you know, don't bother with an Iron Fist origin story or a Luke Cage origin story. Just don't bother with them. Just do Heroes for Hire. And get Michael Jai White in there.
Yes, he would actually be a great Luke
Michael
Cage.
Jai White, I think, would make a great Luke Cage. Because he's huge, and he's a badass, and he's a martial artist.
And those, like, the three qualifications for being Luke Cage.
Yeah, basically. You might have to grow his afro out of it, but, you know.
He would look good in a silver tiara.
No, it's gold. It's gold.
No, the tiara is silver. Because, like, silver tiara, like, giant yellow puffy shirt.
Are we going for the 70s?
Yeah, we're going for the 70s, God, yes. Luke Cage.
Oh, right. That means, Iron Fist's outfit doesn't really change.
No, it's pretty much always just been, like, green pajamas.
It's green spandex with a yellow bandana with eye holes cut out.
I feel like when they make the Iron Fist TV series, they might update his costume a bit.
Yeah, they'll probably try and do an Arrow with it. They'll probably try and do it the same way they did Arrow and give him a hoodie.
Oh, God, does that mean the series is just going to be called Fist?
They better not. They better not. See, the thing is, if they did it as Heroes for Hire as a TV series, that would be amazing.
I really would. I would love a TV series for Heroes for Hire.
It would be like Starsky and Hutch, only with superpowers.
Yes, actually, like, probably set it in the 70s.
Yes. It would be amazing. Marvel, if you're paying attention, listen to us. It should be a 70s buddy investigation superpowered show called Heroes for Hire. You know, who could play Iron Fist?
Do not know.
Owen Wilson?
Ooh, that could be interesting, yeah.
Owen Wilson, because he does have that drawl, doesn't he? And I could see him and Michael Jai White having some good crack, you know, having a good laugh with each other.
Yeah, or possibly... who's the guy who was Sawyer on Lost?
Oh, yes. Another guy you're about. Have you noticed how we've already cemented in our minds Michael Jai White should be Power Man?
Yeah. Marvel, get on that.
Yes. Well, I mean, of all the actors that we know, he's pretty much the only one who fits the bill almost to a T.
No, I mean, I think possibly the only person, like, better physically suited is, like, maybe Terry Crews.
Yeah, but you can't take Terry Crews seriously.
You can't, because he's not a serious guy.
No, he's not, and he's all about power. And especially after Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you can't take him seriously.
I just started watching that. I could never watch him in a serious film ever again.
Yes. So, yeah, Terry Crews is pretty much the only other guy who we can think of. So I think in terms of just being Luke Cage, I think Michael Jai White has it at the moment. But no, we'll have a think about who could play Iron Fist, and we'll get back to you. Anyway, shall we move on?
Yes, that's all my move.
All your moves. Yes. All your moves. Right.
My moves.
That's all your moves, is it?
I have shown you my moves.
You've got no more moves left. Okay, I have a move. I have maybe one or two moves as soon as my mouse moves. George Romero's Empire of the Dead series is going to be adapted for TV. Can you say Walking Dead?
Well, evidently they can.
So, yeah, what do you think of this?
I think, from what you've said of Empire, that it sounds like an interesting TV show with, like, vampires and the zombies are kind of like a slave workforce.
Really?
Well, that's what you said it was.
That's not what I said it was. That's what Rob said it was. Oh.
Well, that's what Rob said it was. I'm just going off his words.
You got the wrong Rob. Okay, so zombies are slaves. Vampires are in this as well.
Yeah, which could make it interesting. But yeah, it is definitely just going off the Walking Dead success.
I'm curious, where did the vampires come from? Is Empire of the Dead an offshoot of, like, Day of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead? Dawn of the Dead, that sort of thing.
I don't know. I'm going to actually look this up now.
Because if it's continuation of that and, you know, Land of the Dead, then you get to Empire of the Dead. So when did the vampires come into it?
Yeah, because I definitely do not remember there being, like, any vampires in any of the Dead films.
Yes, I'm pretty sure there were no vampires in any of the Dead films. Unless we've suddenly gone to a weird Zombieland, Stakeland type crossover land called Empire of the Dead.
Okay, no, apparently it's just like a separate continuity.
Okay. So a separate continuity. Okay. Zombies are slaves. So is this like a Frankenstein's monster type offshoot type thing? Because, you know, when they do all these monster mashup type things, and you have Dracula and you have Frankenstein's monster and you have the werewolf and everything like that, the vampire is at the top and Frankenstein's monster calls it Master.
Yeah, yeah, and then they all do the mash. They do the monster mash.
Yeah. Master. So, yes, anyway, Empire of the Dead is a thing. Do you think it's going to be able to compete with The Walking Dead, though? Because The Walking Dead has Rick Grimes.
Yeah, plus I feel like The Walking Dead has already got its kind of handhold on the whole zombie thing. I feel like, because in general, I think people's love of zombies has kind of waned a bit over these past few years.
That's because there's too many zombies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. People have kind of got a bit sick and moved on, and now really it's only The Walking Dead that's still the zombie thing. But I think possibly Empire, that it could do well if it kind of pushes its angle.
It could do, yeah, it could do. Right. Okay.
Plus, it might answer the one burning question in my mind.
Oh.
What happens when a zombie bites a vampire?
Do you get a zombire?
Exactly.
Zombire.
Answer these questions, Empire of the Dead. What happens and what is it called?
You know, is it a zombie? A vambi? A zombire? Zampire? Zampi?
Yes, it's a zampi.
Zompi. That's it, it's a zompi.
Oh no, the zombies are coming.
Or a vambi. Vambi makes it sound like Bambi, though.
Zombie vampire deers.
Yeah.
Bambi 3, Bambi's mother's revenge.
She was dead for 50 years. Now she's back. Anyway, that was the news. That was all the news that we have so far. If anything else happens, we'll let you know next week. Now we're going to move into some comics.
Yay, comics.
Right. Do you want to start us off?
Okay, yes. I will start us off with some Battleworld tie-ins.
Ooh, Battleworld.
So this is kind of tie-ins to Marvel's current Secret Wars event.
Okay, cool.
So basically all under like the Battleworld banner, which is like the big patchwork earth of all different realities. So first up is Ultimate End, which is kind of set in the Ultimate Marvel Universe.
Okay.
And to be honest, this one was a bit disappointing. Especially, it's by Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley, like, for ages with a creative team on Ultimate Spider-Man. So, like, I was expecting really great things from this, and basically what happens is all the Ultimate heroes and all the, like, normal Marvel continuity heroes kind of just meet up and just kind of talk, and they're like, oh, wow, things are bad, aren't they? Yeah, things are bad. We should fix this. And that's pretty much the whole issue.
Cool.
But yeah, but it's just nothing really happens.
So it's more of a placeholder storyline?
I don't know. I mean,
oh, is it just queuing it up for something else?
I think it's probably queuing it up for them to start maybe trying to fix it and get back to some sort of more normal continuity. In fact, the one good thing about this issue, though, is Spider-Man. Because, like, basically he's running around freaking out because everyone in the Ultimate Universe knows his secret identity. So that's pretty fun.
Okay.
But what was fun was Deadpool's Secret War.
You've been waiting for this one.
I have.
So tell us, Deadpool's Secret War.
Okay, basically it's set during the original Secret Wars series from, like, back in the 80s.
And are we talking about the Beyonder?
Yeah, yeah, the Beyonder.
Oh, God.
And it reveals that actually Deadpool was in that event.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I think the idea is basically he takes place in all the action, like, in between each panel. So, like, literally the plot.
So he was in the gutters?
Yeah, pretty much. But it's, like, basically almost word for word, like, taken from the first few issues of Secret Wars.
Okay.
But with Deadpool just randomly popping up and just, like, spitting off all these, like, insane one-liners. Like, I think my favourite is he compliments the Wasp's balloons and then clarifies that he means her lovely word balloons filled with so much exposition.
Yes.
Because it's great because it just rips the hell out of, like, 80s comic books.
Oh, God, I've got to read this.
You do. Like, also, he fights Kang the Conqueror.
Really?
And defeats him using the one thing Kang can't predict. A kick to the nuts.
Oh, Deadpool, we love you.
Yeah, everyone loves Deadpool.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was fun. It, like, what a big smile for my face.
Have they ever done a Squirrel Girl Deadpool crossover?
Sort of. I think they kind of met when Deadpool used to hang out with, like, the Great Lakes Avengers.
Yeah.
But I think we definitely need some sort of, like, mini-series of them teaming up.
Yes.
Possibly with Howard the Duck as well.
No, I think just Squirrel Girl and Deadpool to start off with. Because they can compare scalps. She can say, I knocked out Thanos, and Deadpool's going to go, really?
Well, actually, yeah, it kind of works.
Oh, no, because they did meet, because Deadpool was the one who introduced her to all the cards.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, she has her Deadpool's, like, top Trump's cards of supervillains.
Yeah, because she got number one off Galactus. So, yeah, because that's, like, the thing she's most into, isn't it?
Yeah, her trading cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully they'll team up in the pages of Squirrel Girl then.
Yeah, hopefully. Right, okay. So, anyway, back to Deadpool's Secret War.
Yes. There's also, like, kind of a mini story at the back of, do you remember the Contest of Champions?
Yes.
Basically, it turns out Deadpool was also in that.
What?
Yes. But basically, he teams up with, like, a bunch of really random minor people who complain that basically they weren't allowed to take part. So they demand they get their own bonus round. So, like, it's literally, it's Deadpool, Rocket Racer, Frogman, She-Man Thing, Pink Sphinx, the Vile Tapeworm, Howard the Duck, and Dupe, because Dupe.
Oh my god.
It's great. And, like, they all fight over some sort of mystical prize, and in the end Deadpool wins it, and it's a medal for participation.
Trophies, always a good thing. Oh my god.
Yeah, Deadpool Secret Series. It's so much fun.
I think Marvel has needed Deadpool for a long time. I think that it was on the until Deadpool, it was on the verge of taking itself far too seriously.
Yeah, that is definitely, like, one of the most prevalent problems in comics. Like, basically since post Watchmen, it's trying to make everything really dark and gritty, and you need characters like Deadpool. You can just go, actually, no, comic books are just, like, crazy fun.
Yeah. Yes, they are. Right, my turn, is it?
Yes, you can have a turn.
Right, I have Avengers World number 21, and it has a lovely image of Thanos and some guy with pointy ears on the front.
Is that one of Santa's elves?
Possibly. The thing is, it doesn't really look like Thanos until you look closely. It just looks like the Hulk wearing a weird outfit, and then you notice his face isn't green. Anyway, Thor has taken to call himself Odin's son, and he is in one reality with Sunspot and Hyperion and a bunch of guys from the AIM labs. And they are being chased by Monica Rappaccini and the Scientist Supreme.
I should probably explain that, like, part of this series is Sunspot is basically bought AIM.
Yeah, basically. So the Avengers is basically Odin, Sunspot, and Hyperion. The Cabal is going around causing all sorts of problems, and the Cabal is made up of Thanos, Black Swan, Terax, Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight, Maximus, and the newly recruited Namor.
Actually, no, he's not. I think Namor's actually technically the one who founded it.
What, the Cabal?
Yeah, because, like, he kind of split off from the Illuminati and decided, I'm just going to do my own thing. You supervillains, you seem like the kind of guys I can trust.
Ah, Namor. Did Sue Storm not teach you anything? Seriously.
No, she evidently didn't.
But anyway, there's reality jumping galore in this, and there is an Amish Reed Richards.
How have we not had Amish Reed Richards before?
Yes, there's an Amish Reed Richards living on his farm with Susan, and he, Namor goes to this planet and then starts punching Thanos and gets into a fight with Thanos. Meanwhile, the AIM scientists who have been bought by Sunspot get attacked by what's-her-face, Monica, or Rebecca, whatever her name is. Monica Rappaccini and the Scientist Supreme, until Thor turns up, or Odin's son, as he's called now, and, gives them what for. Meanwhile, on the different reality, Namor is breaking his bones trying to beat up Thanos, but Thanos is far too powerful, so Thanos easily wins. Namor has set a detonator to destroy that planet reality type thing. Thanos wants the detonator. Namor doesn't have it, though. Instead, he's given it to Amish Reed Richards, who decides to pull the trigger, wiping out his world and possibly his reality as well.
I think so. That's one of the things I've not been that clear on.
But anyway, Thanos escapes and drags Namor with him and says to Namor, all those deaths are on your head. Namor is racked with guilt over what he's created, I think, in this, and I kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah, because I think basically he made the Cabal so that they can go kind of blow up these Earths to stop them colliding with our Earth.
Yeah.
But the Cabal have been taking it way too far. Like, they'll go to these Earths, they'll, like, torture and kill everyone on the planet before they blow it up.
Yeah. So, yes, I mean, this is part of the Secret Wars bit, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of you got to feel sorry for him. Up to Secret Wars ones.
Yeah, you got to feel sorry for Namor in those ones. Anyway,
and I do.
Moving on, back to you.
Back to me. I have got the first of a new series by IDW. It's Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, based off the books by Douglas Adams.
Yes.
So this is by a guy called Ryle Akins, with art by some other people. Oh, no, hold on. It's written by Chris Ryle with the art by Tony Akins.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm smart at reading things. Okay, so basically the general plot is Dirk Gently goes to San Francisco and, like, he has to contend with some sort of crazy plot involving, like, resurrected mummies, serial killers, and just a bunch of other seemingly random events which will eventually prove to be interconnected, as is Dirk Gently's way. And to be honest, I was kind of disappointed with this one, because it's just, it's not that it's bad, it's just, it's not Douglas Adams.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't have that same wit and cleverness that he does.
Ah.
And I think because it's based off of two of his books, I can't not compare the writing to his.
Yeah.
And so I can't help but be disappointed by it.
Yeah, I suppose I kind of understand what you're saying. It's like the graphic novels that they did of the Discworld stuff weren't as good as the actual Discworld books.
They weren't written by Terry Pratchett.
But how much of that is also because of the fact that when you're reading a book, you know, it's your imagination that takes hold. But when you're reading a comic, it's someone else's idea of what the characters look like, how the story progresses, everything like that.
Yeah, I think that could also possibly be one of the problems.
I'll have to have a read of this one, because I do like Dirk Gently and his Holistic Detective Agency.
Yeah, I mean, I say that, I did actually quite enjoy the Dirk Gently TV series they did a while ago.
Yeah, actually, that wasn't it Stephen Mangan was Dirk Gently? I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a shame that got cancelled.
Yes, the long, dark tea time of the soul. Right. Anyway, moving on to me. Shall I do these two before you do...
Yes, you can do those two, and then I'll do my last thing.
Yes, because then I've only got that last one left. And we are speaking in cryptic terms because we don't want to tell you what we're going to do next.
Yeah, it's all very hush-hush and mysterious.
So let's start off with... I think this is the final in this crossover series.
Yes, that is the last
one. This is the final in the crossover series of the ongoing saga that is Django Zorro. And Don Diego has been captured, and one of his friends, Bernardo, has been killed.
That's, I think, kind it's of his manservant.
His manservant has been killed by this fake count or whoever he is. Meanwhile, Django is—he's kidnapped a train, and filled it with explosives, and is riding it towards the mine, ready to destroy the mine, which he succeeds in, but then gets captured straight away. Foolish, foolish Django.
Foolish people trying to capture Django.
Yes, because the Indians then start revolting. And they rescue Django and they kill the people in charge of the mine. Meanwhile, Don Diego is talking to the Count, and obviously the attack starts. And they can't believe that Don Diego is wearing the Zorro mask. And so, and you know, kind of, you're an old man. What can you do? You know, you can't be Zorro. Zorro is a young man. He's handsome. He's dashing. He's debonair. He rides a black horse. Hang on, you have a black horse. Your horse looks very similar to Zorro's horse.
What an odd coincidence.
Yes, what an odd coincidence. Your hat looks strangely familiar. Now that you wear the mask and do the voice, I'm starting to think maybe I am in the presence of El Zorro.
I'd get worried that this guy who sounds exactly like Zorro might actually be Zorro.
Yes. That's basically how it goes.
Pretty much.
You know, he dons the mask and then, you know, his sword skills and everything like that. The fact that he can use a whip. It becomes clear that he is Zorro. And so the guy tries to escape, the fake account tries to escape and goes to his son, who's in bed with that guy's wife. So his son is sleeping with his stepmother, kind of thing. Yeah. Basically, the count's wife is sleeping with the son.
Yes.
Right? And so the count is just kind of, well, you know...
But to be fair, she was kind of the son's girlfriend before the count married her.
Yes, but the count decides to kill his son, so he shoots his son, but then the stepmother shoots the count through the head. And things end when she tells everybody that the count is dead. She renounces her claim to the land, and everything becomes peaceful while Don Diego rides off into the sunset.
Because he's Zorro.
Yes, and he gets the cool ending, whereas Django has to walk home.
Just survive for not being his own horse.
So yes, I do like the last bit though. You know, sad to say, I never did see him again. Diego de la Vega, alias El Zorro, without a doubt, the most peculiar white man I have ever met, and brother, that's saying something. So, yes, Django and El Zorro has finished. And the thing is, it has actually been quite a good ride.
It really has. Like, I picked up the first issue just expecting it to be kind of silly fun. But, like, I really got into it.
The thing is, Django Zorro is one of those ones where you can really see them actually being in the same universe. Because they're both from they're both in the Old West. They both, have that kind of outlaw vibe to them while being heroic at the same time. They're both very much the anti-hero. And you could see them actually working together.
Yeah, I think it would definitely work, like, as a film.
Well, as a film, but you could also see it working as a TV series.
Or just an ongoing... Especially, I want more Django Zorro.
Yes, more Django Zorro. Anyway, moving on to Loki, Agent of Asgard, or The Last Days of Loki, Agent of Asgard, as it's called now. And this, again, is in the run-up to Secret Wars. Odin Allfather has a vision, a dream-like vision of a new Ragnarok, because they did stop the old Ragnarok, but the universe is coming to an end. He demands allegiance from the other realms, and the other realms are going, well, no. Because it's all reached the point now where, you know, if the Lord said, let there be light, the people would say, what color?
Pretty much.
That's basically what would happen now in all of the universes. So Odin's angry and Freya's going, well, what do you expect? You know, she's being typical wife.
Odin does just like literally slam in and scream, all of you must serve me right this second.
Yeah. Loki in the meantime is... kind of donning his new body and not at the same time. I'm not sure what's going on with Loki, but the heroes are attacking the enemy spaceships that are trying to infiltrate Earth, and Heimdall is watching the heroes fight valiantly, and he's passing it on. Meanwhile, in Hell...
Which is Hell with one L, not two L's.
Yes. Odin isn't happy. He's trying to find some solution, but meanwhile, in Hell, Loki has gone to visit his daughter Hela, and...
Except this is future Loki.
Yes, this is future Loki. The old Loki is going to visit his daughter Hela and Tyr. And he wants to wake up a specific child of his. Very specific child of his. One who even Odin couldn't defeat. But Baldur the Brave appears, and he is immune to all weapons and poisons. Except one.
And... just, would you know it, Loki just so happens to have that one on him.
Yes. So, anyway, Freya takes Odin to find the ancient Asgardian weapons.
Yes.
In the deep dungeons of Asgardia, they go to find the ancient weapons of the Asgardians, while the Warriors Three, Volstagg, Fandral, and Hogan, and Amora the Enchantress and Sif, meet up with Heimdall, and Heimdall uses Amora's powers to show
and
everybody.
And various sundry Asgardians.
And various sundry Asgardians, the red shirt and security men. Heimdall uses Amora to show everybody what is coming towards Asgard. And what they see is Loki holding Baldur's head, riding Jormungand,
the
world
Midgard serpent.
Yes, the world serpent. And the Asgardians obviously just take one look and go, brown trousers time. This is not a good day. Because Hela and Tyr, and there's loads of like skeletal horses and creatures from their side, are on their way to Asgard to raise merry hell. But then Odin and Freya turn up.
Yes,
and
with
they
their
say,
ancient weapons. Yeah,
with their ancient weapons. And they say, for Asgard, we die like gods. And there is Freya, looking kind of wizened, but also looking like she belongs in like the latter part of the Mad Max movie.
Yes.
You know, because she's wielding two submachine guns. You know, not submachine guns, sorry. She's wielding two M16s. Odin, on the other hand, is holding a Gatling gun.
Yes.
These are the ancient Asgardian weapons, and it is an awesome sight. Seeing a Viking holding a Gatling gun never gets old.
Well, it is just one of those why I read a comic book moments.
But yes, because Odin doesn't want the new Thor present, because the new Thor is a woman.
And Odin's kind of sexist.
Yes, he is. He's a Viking. What do you expect? So, yes. Aside from that, yeah, I kind of empathize with him, but yeah, I do want the new Thor to turn up, and hopefully she's going to turn up in the next issue. So,
okay.
Yes.
And also, I assume like past Loki is going to show up and actually do something.
Yes. Anyway, moving on to you.
Yes,
with
my last thing is Volume 1 of Alex and Ada, which is it's an Image comic series by Jonathan Luna.
Jonathan Luna?
Yes, with art by Sarah Vaughan.
Ah.
Basically, it is set kind of just a little bit in the future.
Okay.
And basically, we have kind of... Basically, it's like the Apple version of the future in that everyone is like advanced technology stuff. Like, we can now access computers just using our brain, and we have little robotic house servants. And kind of the main thing people have is companion androids. So you can buy kind of an android that looks exactly like a human for companionship. And yes, it is confirmed they get used in exactly the way we expect they would get used.
So basically they're sex dolls.
Yes, basically. And basically they can simulate human emotion, but they're not artificially intelligent, because as part of the law of the series, basically, like, the first self-aware robot went completely insane and killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So now there are strict rules against, like, making actually artificially intelligent robots. So basically, the series focuses on a guy called Alex.
Yeah.
Who, basically, he is just broken up with what is implied to be quite a long-term girlfriend, and it's left him fairly depressed. So his grandma buys him one of these androids called Ada. And like, basically, at first, he really doesn't want it, but he kind of starts to warm up to her.
Yeah.
But then he realizes, basically, he likes her, but he doesn't like the fact that she has no opinions of her own. So he kind of sets off on this journey to discover, well, can I make her self-aware? And basically, he discovers the secret that all these androids actually are self-aware, but they have blocks placed on them to stop them being able to access their full minds.
Hmm.
It's very interesting.
It sounds like the kind of thing that I'd read. It does remind me a little bit of a couple of things, stuff like.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely, when I was reading it, one of the things that popped to mind was the film Her.
Yeah, it reminds me of Her, but it also reminds me of there's an anime movie called HAL. Which which is all about when somebody dies, in order to help people cope with the grief, you can get an android who looks and talks and acts in exactly the same way as the person
who
died.
Actually, Black Mirror did
Mirror did something like that. And there's a manga, manga, whatever you call it, from China called I, the Female Robot, which kind of harks back onto that one, but that's more of a comedy-type series.
There's definitely, it has comedic moments. I'd say. It's more kind of like a comedy drama, I would say.
Yeah. It does sound interesting, though. And there's also Time of Eve, which is the director of Patterman and Vert, which I reviewed on Keyframe. I think it was last week or the week before. It's one of his little OVA things, which was also turned into a movie. But that's all about the relationship between androids and humans as well. It's very much in the mold of this.
Yeah. So anyway, this volume is kind of the first five issues.
Yeah.
And I would definitely recommend getting it kind of in these kind of collected editions, because the pace, I would say, it's kind of quite slowly but deliberately paced.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy it, but I think if I was reading it in monthly installments, I might get a bit annoyed. Because, like, issue one is basically, like, introduces us to Alex, sets up the world he's in, and then Ada comes in at the end of the issue. Kind of issue two is in being like, ooh, I don't want this robot, but maybe I do. Like, issue three is, I like this robot, but what if she was smarter?
Yeah.
Then issue four is, like, him finding out how to make herself aware. Then issue five kind of deals with him actually kind of going into this, like, contract with a self-aware android to make her self-aware as well.
Okay.
Like, each one is definitely, it moves the plot forward.
Yeah.
But again, it's the kind of thing, I'm not sure it would fill a whole month of waiting.
Yeah, true. Right.
And the art is quite nice as well.
I saw the cover.
It's just nice.
Yeah. Right, moving on to Daredevil issue 15.1. Not sure why it's 15.1.
I think just because it's kind of its own standalone thing.
It is kind of a standalone thing. I mean, you've got Foggy having a heart bomb extra with double beef guacamole, pulled pork, ketchup, and cheddar cheese. Also, triple size fries cooked in what I am reasonably certain is Mott Royal. Do you want a napkin? I think this is more kind of Matt Murdock talking about some of the stories of his life as Daredevil. One of the early stories being, his very first case as a defense lawyer. Very first pro bono case as a defense lawyer, where he was defending a guy who he thought was guilty, but then turned out to be innocent, and he captured him as Daredevil. So he captured him as Daredevil. Then he had to try and find out if the guy was innocent or not.
Yeah, it's basically like him learning how to balance being a vigilante
and being
with also defending the law.
Yeah, but then there's the other one. There's like two stories in this from the life of Daredevil. There's that one, and then there's the one that comes afterwards with it, where he is fighting against, I've forgotten his name, where he's fighting against Diablo.
Oh, yes, the alchemy devil man.
Whose outfit looks a bit like Batroc.
It kind of does, yeah.
The alchemy devil type man who has a new drug, a new chemical, and he uses it on Daredevil, and it plays merry hell with his radar stuff. But Daredevil digs deep and eventually beats Diablo, or whatever you want to call him, because he does look like Batroc. I'm sorry, but I keep expecting him just to use Savat straight away.
Batroc the Alka-Leaper.
Yeah. Daredevil wins, but the problem is he's in such a bad state, he crawls to the nearest person who he can trust, which is Karen. And that's where his relationship with Karen goes weird and off the rails, because she finally finds out that he is Daredevil. So, yeah, it's an unusual one. It's more of a nostalgic piece for, like, old Daredevil stories. And the way it's written, it really harks onto the nostalgia of it rather than the actual action element.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely why it's like 0.1 rather than like issue 16.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of poignancy to the way it's written, but it is very much kind of a this is the story of my life type thing. You know, I think that's reflected in the cover, because the cover has, you know, The Man Without Fear, the life story of Daredevil, Matt Murdock. Chapter one has Murdock sitting there at a computer typing this out.
Yeah, because like in the series at the moment, he is trying to write his memoirs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, yeah, that's where the basis of this story comes from.
It works. The thing is, in the context of that, it works really, really well. So, yes, that was Daredevil. I think that's us done for the day.
Yep, that is all our comic books.
What have we got next week? Do we know? Are we just guessing? Are we just going to wait and see? We've got more comics.
I can probably confirm that I will have more Marvel stuff.
Yes, we may also by that point have that massive amount of retro comics.
Ooh,
that
yes,
I have kicking around somewhere.
Reviews.
So yes. Anyway, and I also managed to dig out ROM Space Knight. I've managed to find a whole pile of ROM Space Knight comics. So yeah, I know you've been looking forward to that.
I want to read ROM because it's like one of those random 80s things.
Yeah, it didn't make sense, but it was just kind of, yeah. So basically, humanity is being taken over by these dire wraiths, and they're draining people of blood. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, yes, we have been Four Panel. I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all next week. Take care, have fun, and keep reading those comics.
Yeah, always keep reading the comics.
Yeah, and don't put random speech bubbles everywhere.
Unless you want nice balloons.
Yes, nice balloons, Andrew. Nice balloons.